time in the last six seasons, the Dutch are the champions.
This is Gary O'Neill to win it.
They've got it! Terrific header, Callum Robinson, super ball in.
Great feeling, we have to treasure these nights.
Well, hello there. We're back with another edition of the RTE Soccer Podcast. James O'Toole, as ever, is with us. James, how are you doing?
Not too bad, Adrian. How are you getting on another Monday in captivity?
It's not that bad. Captivity, now that's stretching it a bit. Anyway, you'd be delighted, as Gabe Byrne used to say, you'd be delira and excira that we're doing 2006 Derry's run in Europe. Gretna, Paris Saint-Germain, Gothenburg at the very start. Looking forward to that chat with Sean Hargan and Kevin Deary later.
I have my scrapbook out here in front of me with all the news clippings from the 06 from the journeys around Europe.
And were you there for all of the journeys or most of the journeys?
No, I was there for every single game. Every single game. It was great, actually. Perfect. It was really, really fun. Like from about 300 of us, well, about 200 in Gothenburg, and then obviously moving up to 4, 5, 6,000 people by the time we got to Paris.
Bandwagoners. Yeah. Anyway, that's to come a little bit later. We'll also be chatting to Chris Coburn of St. Pat's about how players are coping and dealing with keeping themselves fit whilst in isolation. But no doubting, the big, big story of the weekend over the last few days, Mick McCarthy departing the Irish football scene and Stephen Kenny elevated to manager with immediate effect. Delighted to say we're joined by our soccer correspondent, Tony O'Donoghue. Kenny Cunningham is also with us. Kenny, first of all, in your view, the right decision made by the FAI, ultimately, in your view?
Yeah, I think so, Adrian. Yeah, I wouldn't have any problems. Would I have some sympathy for Mick? Obviously, he must be a little bit kind of frustrated. I'm sure he would have loved the opportunity to kind of steer the team through the playoffs, the qualification ultimately to the finals. But in view of the circumstances, clearly the FAI had the decision to make, and I think it was a fair decision. I heard Mick speak yesterday, and I think he spoke very well. He spoke with a lot of class, really, a lot of pragmatism, and kind of struck the right tone as well. So, yeah, I have no problems with it. And to be honest with you, I'm quite excited, actually, looking forward to what's coming down the road with the kind of setup that Stephen's put together, both at senior international and the other 21 level. Hopefully, good times ahead for the teams.
Okay, we'll come on to the future very shortly. Tony, it all seemed quite amicable. Admittedly, Mick gets a very, very juicy payoff, so that'll cushion some of the blow. Sentiment on the part of some people might have suggested that Mick might have been able to see out the campaign, finish what he started effectively. But of course, there's a bigger picture here financially as well for the FAI.
Yeah, and you know, Mick is someone I think is generally held in very high regard, and I think he's a very honourable man. And I think the way he's handled himself in the manner of his exit, if you like, is a measure of the honour that the man has. He did make a fuss. There was an opportunity if the games had gone ahead and we had qualified for the Euros and the Euros had gone ahead, that was fine. Then there probably would have been a clamour if we had performed well at the Euros, why Mick shouldn't stay on. But look, we were only at the playoff stage, and if you're being real about it, basically, if our Euro playoff was only came about because of our Nations League ranking and our Nations League performances, which weren't Mick's fault under Martin O'Neill and Roy Keane, weren't very good. So, you know, it's something of a quirk that we're in the playoff at all. So if football is a results business, Mick knows that as well. He's handled himself, I think, with great dignity, and it's time for a new era.
And in your view, Tony, it was his second stint in charge. How will it be viewed in time?
Well, look, as he put it himself, there was a reconnection required between the supporters and the team. You know, it had gone very flat that last Nations League campaign. Maybe we didn't realise the significance of the Nations League in the sense that it is important for your rankings, but, you know, there was rows with players. I mean, the Roy Keane scenario, the Harry Arthur stuff, all the stuff that was going on outside of the field. On the field, it wasn't very inspiring. From Mick's point of view, he took over at a difficult time. What happened then in the FAI? I mean, look, it's still pinch yourself stuff. Like the last 12, 15 months in the FAI has been extraordinary. I mean, nothing in the history of Irish football has ever come close to this. An association right on the brink of bankruptcy. Investigations into corporate governance, and all sorts of things coming out and being investigated. So for Mick to be in charge of his very first game of his second stint in Gibraltar, and on the same day the news emerging of John Delaney's €100,000 loan and all that came from that and all that unraveled from that, you know, lesser men wouldn't have been able to handle the pressure, but Mick in his stoic way managed to keep focus, get the players behind him, I think get the fans on side as well, and that was no easy task. I have to say that was no easy task considering what was going on off stage, if you like. In terms of performances, maybe they weren't brilliant, but in terms of results, Mick will say he only lost one game in 10 in qualifying, albeit you know, two of those would have been against Gibraltar, and we probably would have to admit that we struggled against them. But the spirit was back in the side, you know, late equalisers, almost a hallmark. And you'd like to think, you know, injuries and luck permitting, that we would have had a fighting chance against Slovakia and either Bosnia or Northern Ireland. And from Mick's point of view, a pity he didn't get that opportunity. But as I say, the way it's fallen now, it's interesting for Stephen. We're expecting now that those playoffs, and hoping indeed that those playoffs, the Slovakia game and hopefully a second one after that, a semi-final and a final, won't be till November at least, which means that Stephen Kenny will come into the job and could have as many as 6 games under his belt before he has to play the playoff. That will be the first game, if football continues to go ahead, will be the 3rd of September away to Bulgaria in the Nations League, followed a few days later with a home game against Finland. And they're hoping to get a friendly in each of the dates. And the playoff, as Gary Owens told us on RTÉ Sunday Sports yesterday, hopefully in November. So, yeah, Stephen Kenny will have plenty of time to name his squads, to get to know his players and to give them his message and his philosophy. So, you know, in many ways, although we've seen it as a flawed succession plan, a crazy idea that two managers were appointed at the same time, this might work out.
Well, let's hope so. Kenny, he's going to be assisted, as we know now, by Keith Andrews, by Damien Duff, and Alan Kelly stays on. You were saying there a few moments ago, you're quite excited by what lies ahead, potentially. What gives you grounds for optimism in particular?
Well, on one hand, I look at the makeup of the management team and the individual qualities those people possess. Obviously, I had a work relationship with Damien as a player, but of course, the attributes you needed to be a good coach are very different to those of a player. But by all accounts, speaking to Damien occasionally, speaking to people who've seen him work, he's thrown himself into the coaching over the past couple of years. He's highly motivated, and a lot of people speak very highly of him. I mean, he's only been coaching for a short period of time. I think his move to Celtic really helped him work on that type of top level environment. He's still learning, he's still developing as a coach, but I think his stature as a player will help him. And I think he's a bright lad, Damien, and like I said, highly motivated. And him and Keith working underneath Stephen, I think will be a very strong management team. Keith is very bright, obviously he's got a good eye for the game as well. He's worked alongside Stephen for the past year. So the dynamic looks well. Obviously Alan Kelly brings a lot of bags of experience there as well. So I like the kind of makeup in terms of the people Stephen has put together. That's just the management squad. I think, by and large, the most important factor is the type of players and the quality of players they'll have to deal with it. And I'm still excited. I know Tony said there potentially, or looking back at the games, maybe could make Avic a little bit better out of the squad. But I think if you look at the younger players who are emerging in that squad over the last year, that should fill us with a lot of optimism, particularly hard up the pitch, the development of Troy Parra, Aaron Connolly and Adam Oyd, I'd say in particular. We should be greatly encouraged by that. And even the likes of coming under the radar, Jason Malumbi, Jason Oyd, players like that playing really well at championships level this year. Stephen be very much aware of them, having worked with them at under 21 level. And I think that's one of the advantages Adrian Stephen has had. I know Tony spoke there about the flawed decision in terms of Mick coming in to be followed by Stephen, but in some respects I had no problem with it personally at the time. I could see the advantages of it, and I think one of the advantages was it gave Stephen the opportunity to work at some of our most accomplished players at under 21 level in an international setting, which Stephen has never actually experienced before. He's a hugely experienced manager at club level and actually European football as well, predominantly with Dundalk. But hasn't had a huge amount of experience at international level. So I think just working with a group preparing the team over a 3, 4, 5 day period, which he wouldn't have been overly used to in a kind of confined environment, I think that would have helped him, in fact, bed himself in over the last year. And obviously the opportunity to work with those younger players as well. He knows exactly the quality of those players, their individual strengths, and if they're capable of stepping up over maybe the next 12 to 24 months. So I think there's some real good talent within the squad. And the big challenge, of course, for Stephen and the staff, and as it is for every manager, is to tap into that and just get the very best out of what you have. But I'm very excited by the prospect. I'd congratulate Stephen. I think it's a wonderful story. Must be a very proud moment for him and his family. I know he must be highly motivated to come in and do well. And the gut feeling tells me that he will.
Kenny, speaking about the actual backroom staff, where do you think this leaves Robbie Keane now? Because he's the one that hasn't been mentioned since this all spun up the other day.
Yeah, he hasn't been mentioned. You're probably a bit closer to the action over there, lads, than I am. It doesn't look as if there'll be a position there for Robbie. But I mentioned this, yes, I don't think that's a reflection on Robbie's individual attributes as a coach, the fact that Stephen hasn't brought him in. I think the chemistry has to be exactly right in terms of the management team, and that's Stephen's prerogative in terms of making those judgment call. He's obviously leaning towards Damien in that respect, and Keith. So you have to respect that. It might be tough for Robbie to take, but he's still a young coach, a young man as well. Robbie's still developing. Obviously, he's got an association. He's coaching over at Middlesbrough, and I'm sure he'll just refocus on that going forward. And there's plenty of opportunities, I'm sure, in the future for Robbie to maybe reconnect with the senior international team going forward. But at the moment, he might have to take a step back, concentrate on his kind of club commitments and develop as a coach, stroke manager in that respect. But doesn't mean that this is the end of Robbie Keane's association with the FAI and potentially the senior international team. It's just at this moment in time, we've got to respect the judgment of Stephen in terms of the people that he wants around them, both in the senior international setup and even further below that. I get a sense of, I mean, Tony probably know better than me, that Stephen's probably had a guiding hand in terms of the appointment of John O'Shea under 21 level and maybe even beyond going forward. And I think that's important because I think traditionally, lads, we've had too much of a disconnect between the senior international setup in terms of what's going on below that 21, 19 and 18. I'd like to think that's going to change under Stephen. He'll very much have his hand on the till, very proactive in terms of what's going on at the younger age groups, and certainly much more of a connect between all the managers, the respective managers at those age groups, and I think that's the right thing. I think we'll see that happen more than it has done previously.
You know, we've given the FAI a fair deal of credit, which is rare enough, I suppose, in the way they brought clarity to this situation pretty quickly. It was only when UEFA decided that the playoffs would be at some uncertain point in the future that the whole thing was brought to a head, that, you know, we were going to realise that Mick McCarthy couldn't stay on for the playoffs and have Stephen Kenny managing the Nations League campaign. So they were very decisive. But in this one, it does seem to me that the Robbie Keane issue not being resolved is a flaw in terms of how they've dealt with this. Like, they've moved pretty quickly. John O'Shea was on Game On 2FM the other day, and he was suggesting that Mick should continue on. So obviously he didn't know until a very short time ago that he was going to be part of the under-21 ticket. And I think Robbie, to give him credit, you know, he's our leading goal scorer, you know, most capped player. And I think he needed to know his future as well. He has a 2-year contract, and the FAI have been saying that they're honour bound to, you know, to fulfil contracts. But Neil O'Riordan in the Irish Sun today is reporting that Robbie Keane's contract is due to jump to around €250,000 for the final 2 years of that contract, which would make him the second highest earner in the FAI after Kenny. So this is a loose end that needs to be tied up pretty soon. Now, you know, when Kenny was the under-21 manager, he had Keith Andrews and Jim Crawford with him. In this reshuffle, we see that Jim Crawford is now the under-21 manager with John O'Shea coming in. If Robbie Keane would want it, would there be room in him for him in the under-21 ticket? I totally give Stephen Kenny the absolute right to decide his own backroom team, and he shouldn't have anybody foisted on him. But I don't think that Robbie Keane deserves to be treated in a shoddy manner either.
But just by saying to somebody, look, there's not a position for you here at this moment in time. We very much appreciate the contribution that you've made. But I see, I've got the, it's my responsibility to choose the people around me. who I believe are best to complement my my attributes, and this is the best way forward. I don't think that's treating Robbie Keane shabbily, just to say there's not a position for him on the senior international level going forward. I'm not exactly sure if there has been some silence about Robbie's position. You're talking about a contractual situation there. I think it's a little bit odd, to be honest with you, that Robbie was given such a long period of contract, and Mick was just given a contract of 12 to 18 months when clearly he was brought in to work alongside Mick. I think that was a mistake, if I'm being honest with you. Not that Robbie didn't deserve a kind of long contract, but it seemed pretty obvious that if you bring somebody in a supporting capacity as a coach to work with a manager, they have a contract the exact same length as that manager. And if that had been the case, we wouldn't be having this discussion. But for me, if there isn't a position for him, I don't see a position for Robbie at under 21 level, as you've suggested, working alongside John and Jim Crawford. That's one body too many for me. I don't think that'll happen. And if there isn't a position for Robbie in the senior international, which doesn't seem to be the case, I think Robbie will just take a step back. All it needs is for Robbie to have a conversation with the FAO into some kind of agreement. Yeah.
And my point was that conversation should have happened before this news was released, in fairness to Robbie.
It may well have happened, Tony.
Because Gary Owens told us on radio yesterday that they were going to be in discussions with Robbie's agent. And I just feel that should have been done, and the whole thing should have been coordinated. There were three members of the under-21 squad. That's the point I was making before. There was Stephen Kenny, Jim Crawford, and Keith Andrews. So, you know, having three on the management team for the 21s isn't such an unusual thing. But from Robbie's point of view, yeah, he has got a contract which is giving him a lot of money to be involved in the FAI. And, you know, I think that needs to be resolved.
That's what I agree with you. It has to be resolved, and I think it will be resolved very quickly, because we can't be paying that amount of money, whether it's Robbie or anybody else, and not have a position for him within the association and doing our work. That's a ridiculous situation. So I'd imagine those conversations have been had. Clearly they haven't come to an agreement, whether it's between Robbie directly with the FAI or Robbie's representatives. There has an agreement being reached so far, but I expect that to be sorted out very quickly. So I don't think it's anybody's interest for this particular situation to drag out any longer.
Okay, watch this space, as they say. Well, let's hear from Ireland's latest manager, following in the footsteps of fellow Dubliners like Brian Kerr and Owen Hand and Liam Toohey before that. Johnny Giles, of course, as well. Stephen Kenny is Ireland's new manager, as with immediate effect. He spoke to FAI TV at the weekend.
I feel it's an incredible year, really unprecedented. You've got the Euro playoff against Slovakia, of course, and we've got the Nations League, six games in the Nations League, and also World Cup qualifiers this year. So that's never happened before, where you've got Euro playoffs, Nations League, and World Cup qualifiers in the same calendar year. Nine games between September and November. An incredible schedule, and very, very exciting. Very, very exciting year, and you know, we've a lot to look forward to. Keith has been coaching the Ireland under 16s, 17s and 18s and coached with the under 21s for me this year. We had a great rapport, really, and very forthright, and I welcome that. And I think that's, he's done very well. Damien was with the Ireland under 15s, Damien Duff, and did very well, and has been at Shamrock Rovers, and reports are with Celtic's first team this season that he's been excellent there all year. And you know, very, very high work ethic, and a big addition to the coaching team. Alan Kelly has a wealth of experience and a very analytical goalkeeping coach, so we're delighted to have him. You know, Jim Crawford, was Ireland under 18 manager, and then he came in last year with the under 21s, and he's made a great contribution really over the campaign. We're winning the group at the moment with three games left, and in the group, and so to try and qualify for the under 21 European Championships. That has now been put back a year, of course, and John O'Shea alongside him, you know, a lot of experience working with Reading, and I'm sure they'll look forward to that challenge as well.
There you go. That's Stephen Kenny speaking to FAI TV at the weekend. Kenny Cunningham has left us for now. Keith Tracy steps in. Keith, what have you made of the events of the last few days?
I'm quietly confident about it all, to be honest. And it's the first time in a long time that I've put any positivity towards the FAI, given, you know, on a football front, regardless of everything that's gone on in the background at a higher level. But on paper, it looks great. I'm quite close with Keith Andrews, and that fella's knowledge of the game is second to none. And he has held conversations with me, from Danny Mandrew to people that you've never even heard of in your life, and he will know what their attributes are. He play. Damien's played at the top level. He's played in the World Cup. He's played in the Champions. He knows what it is to be an international and play at the highest level. So he obviously knows what he's doing. And Alan Kelly was there when I was playing. So it goes to show you how much experience that fella has. So I think it shifts a lot of light onto the youth. I think the youth are going to get a lot of trust in them. And if I was in the 21s now, I'd be delighted with what's happening. So I think it's going to be an appointment for the next couple of years. And I think ultimately mixed style of play left a sour taste in the mouth. We had Denmark, Gibraltar, Georgia and the Swiss, and we couldn't convincingly get out of that. We were scrapping for our lives. I know we got to a playoff, but the way we were playing, I didn't see us getting out of it. And even if we did get out of the first the Slovakia game, I really thought the North would do us as well. So I just didn't. I think it's a good appointment to get Stephen in now, get his stamp on it. And yeah, I think the youth, everybody in the youth now will be really done with that extra bit of bizarre in their game. And hopefully, we start playing a bit of football that we can all enjoy.
And Keith, what do you think of other pundits who are suggesting that Stephen's CV isn't quite up to scratch to take on such a job, like claiming that Dundalk isn't good enough to be up there? Like,
well, Dundalk done it. They done it in Europe. And, he's never going to get that experience unless he's given the chance. He's done outstandingly at Dundalk. He's done quite well in the 21 games that I've seen, which, quite a number of the 21 games I've got to see. And the way they're passing the ball is just a total difference to the first team. And this goes back years. Like, I'm 31 now. When I was playing for the 21s, there was such a disconnect from the 21s to the first team. There was very, very little interaction. Very rarely would you go up and train and drop back into the 21s. It was, they're the first team, this is the 21s. There was no connection to them at all. So that would be out the window with Stephen and Damien and Keith and, obviously Alan Kelly as well. But Keith will be promoting the 21s, Damien will, and obviously Stephen will. So with the likes of Conley, Paddock and Ida coming through, if we can get a couple more in there, more exciting players that we can pass the ball, keep the ball and have a possession-based game. Well, yeah, ultimately time will tell how Stephen does, but I'm quite optimistic, especially with the people he has in the background.
Tony, people often say in this kind of situation, fans will have to be patient, but international football, it's a tough, hard business, and patience isn't always associated with it. And the difficulty for Stephen in taking over the team at this point in time is the current situation that's afflicting the whole world. Everybody, of course, in lockdown effectively right across the world. It's so uncertain. Bulgaria scheduled to be his first game in charge in September. We can't be sure that that'll happen. He won't really get an opportunity now to see several players in action. So it's a very difficult time for him to be taking over, isn't it?
And not just that. I mean, I would share the Keith's optimism that things can only get better. But having said that, I mean, we can't expect with a wave of his magic wand that Stephen Kenny suddenly turns Ireland into world beaters.
But isn't that what a lot of people are expecting almost?
That is an issue because, he has managed throughout his career at League of Ireland level, certainly, and even at Dunfermline, to turn difficult situations around. But at international level, it's a different ball game. He's also managed to get the under-21s playing a good brand of football, and maybe they're the future. But, I often warn against that. The amount of players we've seen at underage level who we feel are going to be the finished article, are going to have a great career in the game, and it doesn't happen for a variety of reasons. So, I'd be urging a little bit of caution that Stephen Kenny isn't going to turn things around overnight, but he does have a different way of approaching the game. He does have a very positive outlook, and I think we will see a lot of those younger players, and the timing is right. He's had them at under 21 level. He's got to know them a lot better, and they're maturing. And by the time certainly the Slovakia game comes around, we could see Adam Ida or Troy Parrott or Jason Malumbi become regular squad members, at least if not team members in the Republic of Ireland side. And you'd like to think we'll be approaching those games with less fear, perhaps. We have had, managers with huge reputations, none bigger than Trapattoni, perhaps, or Martin O'Neill, people who've had, great careers in the game at playing and management level, and they haven't managed to turn the Republic of Ireland situation around. So don't think it's going to be a cakewalk for Stephen Kenny.
Certainly not. Keith, in terms of the players, and James alluded to the point, will the players show the kind of faith in the manager? Because a lot of the players, the English-based players certainly, won't be familiar with his achievements with Dundalk. The old show me your medals argument. He's got plenty of silverware in his locker from his time at Dundalk, but a lot of the players simply won't know who Stephen Kenny is. It was a similar situation, I guess, to some extent, that Brian Kerr faced a few years back. But is that an issue at all that, you know, will there be any issue at all for players buying into what Stephen Kenny, the message he's going to try and impart to them at international level?
No, I wouldn't have thought so. Like, they're all professional footballers, and let's be honest, as soon as they heard Stephen Kenny got the job, if they didn't know who they were or who he was, they could have just Googled him and made himself familiar. So most of these players, we have to remember, have played in the League of Ireland at some point. I know a couple of them haven't, but, you know, look at Seamus, the captain. He, you know, cut his teeth in Sligo. So, you know, I think they will all know him. They'll all be mind. I think they'll all be familiar with how Dundalk got on in the Europa League as well. So, yeah, I think they will buy into it. And if they don't, I don't think they'll stay in the team. I know how Keith is. I mean, I played with Damien, but I know how Keith is, and he's a very strong man and very hard to please. So if people are only half dipping their toe in the water and not fully buying in, I'm sure they won't stay in the squad for too long.
And in terms, Keith, of international football, Stephen, as we witnessed at Dundalk, before that at Derry City, for instance, and even with the under-21s, he likes to play attacking football, adventurous football. Will he have to temper that style, his management style, when it comes to international football at senior level, do you think?
I think he will, just because of the players that we have available to us at the minute. But like, this isn't going to be a quick fix. I think Stephen is going to have a rocky start with the games he has coming up and the Nations League. And these are very big games to come straight into, so I think it could be a rocky start, but I think after that, when we get over the little blip, I think we'll start seeing the 21s. Because, you know, the 21s might come in, they might play. That's a lot of weight on these young lads' shoulders. Like, some of these have only got two or three games in the Premiership and they're coming into an international side and getting the weight of the world on their shoulders. Not everybody reacts very well to that. So sometimes the manager won't even put them in because of the fear of that. So, you know, I think there could be a little blip, but once we get over that, I think we'll be fine. I think Stephen will really put a stamp on the team. He'll get them playing well. And I think, honestly, I think there's a bit of a feeling with the Irish fans that we can take losing if we're trying to play a bit of football. If we're kicking it long and it's like watching paint dry and we're still only, you know, scraping a 1-1 draw or maybe losing 1-0, we're thinking, why not try and play? Why not have a go at it and lose the right way?
And before we let you go, Keith, are you enthusiastic about Jim Crawford being the under-21 manager? What are your thoughts on that? And John O'Shea obviously moving in as part of the ticket.
Yeah, I think it's another great balance. I think Stephen would have obviously taught Jim a lot of, you know, under the 21s with him and Keith there as well. So it's a natural progression for him to get the job, and obviously with Keith moving up with Stephen. So, yeah, I think there's going to be a great rapport now between the 21s and the first team, and that bodes well for everybody. So, yeah, I think it's another positive move. And, you know, if the 21s will definitely be playing the same style of play that the first team will be playing. So, you know, we're all on the same him, she, so hopefully things can only get better.
Okay, thanks very much, Keith. We leave it there. That's former Irish international Keith Tracy, and before that, our soccer correspondent Tony O'Donoghue. Now then, while the cat's away, the mice will play. That's what they say. The question is, are the mice actually playing ball? Are they sticking to the programmes laid out? We're joined now by St. Pat's FC strength and conditioning coach Chris Coburn, who oversees the players at St. Pat's in terms of their, obviously, strength and conditioning. How are you doing, Chris?
How's it going, lads? I'm keeping well myself.
Good, yeah, not too bad. Yeah, not too bad. I'm just wondering, what kind of training programmes are players being given? Given that everybody's in lockdown mode at the moment, how do you tailor a keep fit programme for players, given that you don't get to see them at all, practically?
Yeah, it's been a bit of a challenge, but there's a few apps online that help out with tracking their running using GPS and things like that, so that's been a big help. Obviously, not being able to access gyms has been a major issue in terms of keeping their strength levels up and developing that sort of thing. But I suppose we've just been kind of making the best we can with home workouts and things like that, giving the lads a bit to do to keep whatever gains they can without regressing too much over this period, really.
Will you tell us, just especially for those who may not be into the various apps that are out there, but can you explain how that technology helps nowadays?
So the one we use is actually called Strava. So it picks up the GPS on the phone when the lads go into the app. and they carry it with them when they run, either in their pocket or in their hand or whatever, and it basically picks up the distance that they cover and the speeds they run at. So then that then uploads into the app so myself and the other coaches can see it, and it lets us to track what they're doing and make sure they're not skiving off too much.
And is there any way around it? Can the slackers continue to slack at all? Or are they very exposed?
Well, in fairness to the lads that we have, most of them are incredibly dedicated and work very hard. So we
come on.
But I'm sure if you wanted to, you could potentially work a way around it. But well, I haven't experienced anything like that so far anyway, thank God.
Chris, I know Strava very well. So have you set up a team with just the lads in it? And are they trying to push each other on for how far they're going and how quick they're going as yet?
So we have given them specific distances. So it's more kind of speed where they'd be looking to challenge each other and stuff on. And they are, yeah. There's a bit of crackle every now and then where lads will be putting up their scores and it'll be better than someone else's. And they'll put a comment underneath theirs letting them know and stuff like that. So it's kind of keeping a bit of camaraderie going, a bit of crack going with the lads as well. So they are obviously naturally very competitive group of people. So that kind of thing does help with buy-in as well and keeping people going at it.
Because the VO2 gets shown as well, it's also shown what kind of level they're staying at as far as their aerobic fitness is concerned.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And I mean, just like I was saying, fitness isn't really the issue because you can keep track of that with things like the VO2 and the distances and the speeds they're running at. It's more the gym side of things is where it's kind of more concerning. But again, like I said, they're a very committed group, so whatever you tell them to do, they're more than keen to get it done. It's almost at times stopping them doing too much, which is a great place to be.
But presumably, Chris, as well, that the training regime that the players are undergoing at the moment is very different now because, as things stand, they don't have a game on Friday. So how much have you changed what they would normally do, given that they might have a match at the end of a regular week?
Well, yeah, it's even completely different in terms of they don't have anyone to kick a football with, which is probably the biggest difference from day-to-day training. So we kind of, based off the short season we did have the 4 weeks ago, based off the GPS data we collected there, we kind of mirrored that as much as possible into these weeks with different runs on different days. And certain days we go for longer runs, other days we have them doing shorter, sharper stuff, kind of more. That'll be more kind of mirroring a game type situation. Obviously, individually, it's pretty difficult to actually do that, but we're giving our best shot with these types of runs. And then we kind of try and match their total distance over that week to a week that would, let's say, have a game. Or even some days might have the two games at the Friday, Mondays.
Yeah, nobody, of course, is enjoying the lockdown, but I guess for some players who've been carrying niggling injuries, it's perhaps a good break to have in terms of not exerting themselves.
Yeah, it's a good chance for lads to kind of fix small issues they have, like you know yourselves. No one's ever 100% free of niggles or anything like that. So kind of breaks like this allow people to maybe focus on those small things that have been holding them back or causing them issues over a long period of time that they haven't had time to actually to focus on and fix because they're just trying to get game to game or work on other areas of their game. So I suppose in that way it has probably benefited a few of our players. But again, we were pretty lucky in the players we have. They're fairly robust. They don't seem to break down too much. And I know they're in touch with our physios very regularly about these kind of things. And they have kind of prehab, rehab programs to be doing. And I'm fairly sure they are doing them in terms of we're getting some pictures and that in the WhatsApp group. So we know what they're at and that side of things as well.
And you've worked with other teams as well. The Kilkenny Hurlers, is that right?
Yeah, I was with Nick Dempsey then in Kilkenny for the last 3 years, yeah.
And how different would the training be for a hurling setup as opposed to, say, the likes of the St. Pat's players? Or would they be quite similar?
I suppose the main difference is, sorry, the most obvious one is the professional versus the amateur. I mean, we have the lads during the day, so we can get probably a bit more out of them in terms of we can do a double session with the pitch in the morning and gym in the afternoon or vice versa. Whereas with the hurlers, the lads have work during the day, so or college or whatever, have other commitments, so they can't necessarily be available to us as often. Weren't available to us as often as possible as that, just because of their other commitments in their lives. So that'd be the main difference. And kind of in terms of what you do in training, obviously slight tweaks, but majority of the stuff will be fairly similar in terms of getting lads as fit as possible, as strong as possible, and to prevent injuries and get them through the season able to perform at the highest levels.
And of course, in theory, Chris, June 19th is the return date in terms of football in this country. That's what they're hoping for. We shall see if that comes to pass. But presumably now in the next week or two, you'll be cranking it up, or maybe in a few weeks' time, you'll attempt to crank it up. But it's tricky when you don't know for sure, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's very hard to kind of, that carrot out in front of the lads of June 19th, if that gets pushed back, it's very hard to kind of crank things up to there, then drop them off, crank them up again if it's a new day. So I think we're going to try and kind of, we're at a pretty high level now, in fairness. The lads are covering a good distance a week. So I think we're going to try maintain that as much as possible, obviously with slight variations up and down, just to either push them slightly further or give them a bit of a rest week. And then we're going to, again, aim for June 19th. Hopefully we'll be able to start an actual football pre-season a few weeks before that. And then we can work from there in terms of what we're looking to get in those few weeks, both in the gym, on the pitch, and in terms of running.
Okay, well, listen, we wish you the very best of luck. Many thanks for joining us on the RTE Soccer Podcast. That's Chris Coburn, strength and conditioning coach at St. Patrick's Athletic. Are you ready, James? 2006. Here we go.
What a year.
What a year. If you had to pick, if you had to pick out one memory of that European run of Derry, what would it be?
Oh, God. Do you know what? There was a couple of memories during. There was one the night before, on the day of the Gretna game. I don't know if you remember this, but the UK skies were shut down due to them finding a terrorist plot to hijack a plane, which left a lot of Derry fans scrambling for ferries out of Belfast and Larne to get to Scotland for that match. It was a strange, the match itself during the morning time was a very, very strange time because nobody knew how many people were going to turn up and how many people didn't. But I think the main memory is Gothenburg and Sean Hargan's goal.
We had a great team ethic, you know, it was great honesty and hard work on the team, and obviously the new Ireland manager, Stephen Kenny, has to take great credit as well. We had worked a lot on set pieces. Thankfully, Kevin pulled a great corner out of the bag, and I was lucky enough to meet it.
It was all about the delivery, wasn't it, Kevin?
It's great to hear, Hargy. I didn't know he was going to be on the line. No, as he said, hey, we had a tremendous work ethic. And the thing that we'd done, hey, we had a real bit of fun as well, because we knew we all had each other's backs. And it's a great feeling when you have that in a team. And as Sean says, credit to Stephen. Stephen, actually, that season, we were goal difference away from winning the treble. The year we won that FA Cup in the last game in Lansdowne, we lost the league in goal difference. And we managed to win the League Cup that year. So I know Dundalk were very close to doing it last year, but we were the same. We were goal difference away in 2006. Correct me, aren't I right there, Sean?
Yeah, I think it's probably one of the best League of Ireland teams, and definitely one of the best Derry City teams that didn't win the league. As Kevin says, we lost the treble and goal difference to Shells, and we lost in the last day down at Cork. We only needed a draw and we could beat. But it just wasn't meant to be.
Yeah, going back to Gothenburg, like the first half in that game, I'm sure you guys remember it, but sitting in the stand watching the first half was nail-biting stuff. And you said people were throwing bodies on the line and everything got in the way. David Ford in particular had two or three really, really good saves. But from that on, like as soon as the second half started, you seemed to get more belief in yourselves. Would that be true?
Definitely, James. I think even Hargy will back me up in saying this here. We've done a good bit of video on them. We were watching the level, and to be fair, Stephen pulled off a masterclass. We watched videos. He didn't show us anything that really would scare the living daylights out of us. And he showed us some clips and some games where he says, listen, it's Gothenburg. They're a European giant. But he felt that we were good enough and capable of going there and getting a result. And we believed it as well. So it's a big quality. As he backs his team, he backs his players. And that's what he done to us out there, and we had the belief that we were going to get a result. And thankfully, Hargy scored a great header from my own set piece. But we had an unbelievable belief that we were going to beat Gothenburg and whoever we played.
And of course, you overcame them at home as well. I was up at that game, 2006, the 1-0 win. Stephen O'Flynn, I think, with a penalty. It wasn't necessarily the greatest of games, if memory serves, but it was all about getting the result. But hey, Gretna, Kevin Deary, have a listen to this.
We'll go for a goal. Set it up for the cross. There's the answer. It's a magnificent strike by Deary. Deary have the lead. And free kicks don't really come much better than that. Good running by McHugh. This is Martin. Confidence running through the ranks here at Deary. And a shooting chance once again. Oh, that's magnificent. Has Deary again?
James, for the benefit of listeners to the podcast who maybe weren't really tuned into football back in 2006, because let's face it, it's a long, long time ago now. Talk to us about those goals. You might just describe them for listeners. We'll get Kevin's view of your description very shortly.
Well, to tell you the truth, it all started very poorly in Gretna, if you remember, in Motherwell. We went 1-0 behind, and then a free kick played from the middle of the box. I think it goes to Sean. Is it you heads it back in for Darren Kelly to score the equalising goal just before
half
time?
Yeah, I got us back on it. Yeah, you got us back into it.
Yeah, and it's a free kick that Stephen Kenny used at Dundalk a number of times as well. And then, of course, Kieran gets up, cracks in a free kick. 2 minutes later, cracks in another sweet half volley just into the top corner. And the Gretna fairy tale is then done and dusted. And I remember Brooks Mielsen saying afterwards how it was a nightmare for him. And he even had his wonder man, Roddy Collins, doing a bit of scouting for him before that on Derry and telling them what they could do for about Derry. Then, of course, Kieran cracks in two more goals, and it's just a crazy, crazy day, and probably one of the most mentalist games I've ever seen in my life.
Kevin, I was just having a look back at them today. The two strikes were just sublime. The free kick from some distance out, and then the second was a peach of a strike as well.
No, just as Hargan had, though, we trained the night before in a game, and it was a ball that we'd never used before. And we were chatting about them, and we were saying, if you had them right, they fly like. And it's just one of them games. I've got a free kick, and I felt it was the right distance. I was hitting them quite well the day before in training, and I said, I'm going to have a rattle here. Obviously, it's gone on the top corner, but it's down to the team again. It's down to the belief we had. No, I think I keep joking with my wife and my son. I says, make sure that doesn't go on my headstone, because that's hurt me. So it is. You think I never played any other games. I've managed to play over 350 games, I think, with Derry. For them, two goals seems to be what I'm known for, not winning trophies and things like that. So I joke a lot about that.
There was a great story we had before the match, actually. We were going down. We got a taxi from our hotel to the train station. The taxi driver said to us, he said, who do you think will score Derry's first goal? And we said, Darren Kelly, no question, corner or something like that. And the taxi driver put a bet on it and met us after the match and brought us all for a drink after, because he won a fortune on Darren Kelly scoring the first goal. But it was just the memories of that weekend, or that Wednesday night, Thursday night, was absolutely brilliant. And then just bring them back to the Brandywell, an absolute jam-packed Brandywell, which is going to be celebrations from then on, that, especially over that tie.
Yeah, and Sean, they gave you a bit of a better game of it in the second leg. It ended up being 2-2. What are your recollections of that evening?
Yeah, well, I think it was just important for us because we had obviously won the first game 5-1. It was just a hold that we had, and make sure that we didn't go behind too early and lost too many goals. And Stephen had his well drilled. And I think too, the lack of respect that some of the clubs showed us, like Gretna's manager and that, you know, I think at the time Stephen played a lot off that, because, you know, we didn't really give us any credit for anything. And that had Stephen used that to the players, and everybody was just like, we're definitely not losing this game. And it just drove the team forward. Like.
And Kevin, what were your thoughts then in the next round when you drew a side of the calibre of Paris Saint-Germain to play them over two legs?
Well, first and foremost, my chat with Stephen was, if I score two and Gretna get dropped for the next game, he dropped me for the home game. So it shows you the caliber that Stephen was thinking. I sat on a bench, and I think I got all about 12 or 15 minutes they go in the home tie. But I think we were all sat in the old Brandywell office waiting on the third round tie, and all the players were together there after training, and we obviously got PSG, and there was a rapturous applause from us, and we were all geared up for it. But I always remember Stephen as well being disappointed. He seen the bigger picture, obviously being manager. He thought, let's get a draw that we're capable of probably winning, and that's my overall memory of it. We were delighted as a group of players. We're going to Parc des Princes, and we're playing PSG in the Brandywell, so we were delighted. But I remember Stephen going, no, he was walking about scratching the head a wee bit, hoping for an easier draw.
And it was 0-0 in the first leg, Sean. So you headed into the second leg with a real fighting chance.
Yeah, well, their manager was the only manager that came to watch us, I think. We were playing Shells that week before, and obviously we were going for the league, so Stephen had the strongest team out against Shells down at Toka. And their manager came over from France to watch that game. So the game in the Brandywell, they played a really big physical team and just kind of matched us up. But I remember Killian Brennan had the crossbar in the game, I know we rode her up a bit, but you know, we could have maybe got that 1-0-1, but the Parc des Princes was a different story.
They just showed that how above they were of Derry, just putting the foot down as soon as the first goal went in. But still, a very good performance. The two goals are actually deflected in past David Ford, if I remember correctly.
Go ahead, Hargy.
Yeah, well, I remember Eddie McKinnon lost his marker, so we'll have to give him a bit of slagging about that. But he got blocked off for the first one, and Petta, I can't remember the guy that sent the forward's name, but
he and then Paletta got the second one.
Paletta lost Eddie, and he deflected one in. And then it was the second one was a set piece that somebody lost, and by the line, I think David Ford kind of got a bit of a muddle on the line and sneaked over. But that's a point, you know. But it was a great run and a great game for us, like.
And on the night when the final whistle went, Sean, what were your feelings? You had bowed out, but it had been a tremendous run.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, the fans that season were just unreal. You know, they travelled in their droves to Scotland, to Sweden. They had a certain amount, and then and the Parc des Princes, you know, there was a couple of thousand of them up in the stand, and it was just testament to the fans and the, I think the players after the game, you know, went over and gave them applause for following us all around Europe that year. But it was just back into the changing rooms. It was disappointing, but the players are really proud of what they had achieved that season in the European run.
And Kevin, how do you reflect on it all now?
No, absolutely. I think it's real testing time for everyone now, and it's great looking back fondly, and you obviously, we all take things for granted. So, no, just thinking back to that, it was a memorable night for us. Even though we lost, we didn't quite get the group stages, but your mother and your father and your wife and all were in the stand, and just overall emotion was like, we were proud to be from Derry. We were very proud to be Derry men, and we represented our team with pride and passion. And then we fell a wee bit short, so thinking back now, we're very grateful for our memories, and we just have to keep casting our mind back and remembering that don't take things for granted, because look at the pandemic we're sailing at the minute, and it's great to look back at this now and have tremendous memories with the likes of Sean and all them boys, because they were all great players and great people. So that's my overall memory of it all.
Great memories. Before we let you both go, you both referenced Stephen Kenny, who was manager at the time. His appointment, we knew it was coming, but obviously it's come a lot sooner than many people would have anticipated a few weeks ago. What marks him apart, Sean, in your view, as a manager?
I think just his man management, and he was meticulous in his preparation for games. Always had a good background team around him as well. Trusted people, trusted the players that he brought in. And if you buy into what he's trying to do, it works well. I know, like, when he went to Rovers and stuff, some players didn't buy into it, didn't work out. And sometimes when you go to maybe your own hometown, you know, people don't see the same. But anywhere else he's went, he's achieved unbelievable stuff.
What do you reckon, Kevin? Are you optimistic about the Stephen Kenny era that's about to unfold?
I'm very excited. Just obviously he's gone up the grades and up the calibers of players. What he's working with, but he's got a great eye for a player, as you've seen. He's done great work with 21s even. He's had some of them young boys really firing and going really well. So really, I think it'll be an exciting appointment. It'll be different from the Mick McCarthy era. I think it'll be more positive in terms of taking teams on. Obviously, you can only work with players you have, but really excited because I know Stephen, and I know he's all about backing his players and getting them passing and playing on the front foot. So I feel Ireland have players, they do that. So really looking forward to his reign as a national team manager.
All right, listen, lads, thanks for joining us and for recollecting that famous European run of Derry City's back in 2006. Thanks to Sean Hargan and to Kevin Deary. James, did you enjoy that trip down memory lane?
It was a great time. It bust the bank on many people because it wasn't cheap. But do you know what? This is why we love the League of Ireland, because unlike some teams, you've fallen in a team in the UK or anything like that, the odd year you get to go to Europe, and what more could you ask for than following your team across Europe? And it's been brilliant, no matter who you support, especially in Ireland, if you're a Rovers fan, Shells, Bowes, Drogheda, Dundalk, Sligo, Cork all had massive nights in Europe, and there's nothing better than them nights, especially when you're supporting your local club.
All right. Listen, we'll leave it there. Hard to beat, certainly, European travels, no doubt about that, but no travelling at the moment as things stand. We'll chat, of course, on the next podcast with James. We'll have other guests as well, and we'll look back on another great time in Irish football. In the meantime, stay safe. Look after yourselves. Bye-bye.